Hello and welcome to 10 Lessons Learned, where we talk to sages and gurus, leaders and luminaries from all over the world to dispense their wisdom for career, business and life. That's wisdom for your career, business and life. That way we make the world a little wiser, lesson by lesson. My name is Robert Hossery and I'm your host for this episode. Today's guest is Lee Eldridge. Lee works with athletes and business executives in elite environments, including professional rugby and football players, and for those of you in the US, soccer players, world-ranked tennis players and C-suite executives at multinational companies. He is the founder and performance director of Cognitive Athlete, a bespoke human performance coaching company on a mission to lead elite business executives towards obtaining and sustaining optimal results over the long term. You can find out more about Lee on his company page, cognitiveathlete.co.uk, or in the show notes on our website. Lee holds a Master of Science in Human Performance and a Bachelor of Science in Sports Science and Coaching. His life passion is coaching people to achieve their full leadership potential, and we're really happy to have you with us here today. Welcome, Lee.
Thanks so much, Robert. Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about the Cognitive Athlete.
Okay, so professionally, yep, a human performance coach, probably in the elite environment, you'd say around 15 years previously to that, some kind of different sports, a father, so based in North London. I've spent some time working in Switzerland and in Spain and moved back this July 2022. Because we had our second child and we wanted a little bit more family support. So yeah, so in an all-round terms, that's what's going on at the moment, basically. And Cognitive Athletes started its journey probably about 13 months ago. It had been in my head for a long time, and that came about from a conversation with a CEO when I was trying to talk to him about what we can bring across from working with professional athletes, where we're all about maximizing performance because we're trying to get as much out of the athlete because they've got such a short career, to when we look at with business, it's more about optimization because it's a long-term kind of endurance event, basically. So I basically then turned around and said, hey, look, you're a cognitive athlete, meaning that your brain, it is the performance indicator, and that's the one that we're trying to improve performance or sustain performance. But obviously now we know that we need to look at it like as in a holistic point of view, i.e. every area, body, brain, all of those types of different things. So yeah, that's where it comes from.
That's wonderful. It's an approach that, when you put it that way, it's an approach that should be taken by a lot of senior executives, because the world is also changing so quickly, constantly. Yeah. And what got you here is not going to get you there.
No.
So now that's a great business, and it's a great way of maximizing that, optimizing, as you put it, the performance from the senior yeah. executives. Look, before we get started on your 10 lessons, let me ask you this question. Lee, what would you tell your younger self if you had the opportunity?
So I would say, don't worry about what other people think. And I think that's a huge lesson from my side, is that lots of times we go about life worrying about what others think, and that really stops us from, you know, whether it's stepping out on stage or singing or learning a language or whatever it might be, because we're so kind of ingrained in terms of that. And I think that true high performers or true sustainable performers understand that process. And they're the ones that are willing to kind of, we all understand this idea of, you know, getting out of your comfort zone on a daily basis. And for me, that's one thing that, whatever it might be, it doesn't have to be a daily occurrence, because that sometimes can be quite difficult. But as long as each week you're kind of like putting yourself out there and you're doing it, and the more you do it, it's like anything, you know, it's like the best analogy for me is, you know, learning to ski. You know, you go on the green slope and you're like, oh my, and then you go blue and you're like, oh. And then you just keep going and going. And then eventually you get to the black run, basically. And that's, you know, and then you're like, right, I'm trying to get better and better at that. And that's, I think, for me is, yeah, I'm not worrying about what people think.
I love that. because it took me decades to understand that. And I think it's the pressure the society puts on us as individuals, and we cave to it instead of being the individual that we should be and realizing no one's really thinking of you anyway. So it doesn't matter.
So for me, it's interesting because obviously I've got a young family and young kids don't care about what they look like. They'll dance stupid at parties. And then we kind of go through this transition period of really worrying, sometimes really worrying about what people think. And then we get to that age and we're just like, we don't care.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, whatever happens, you know, people won't remember us.
I think that's a fantastic lesson. I love it. I love it. Well, all right, let's just jump into your 10 lessons. Let's start with lesson number one. Understand what you're hiding. Explain that to us, Lee.
Yeah, so this came about, I'd always kind of struggled through school academically and growing up. There were some tough moments in terms from teachers and also friends or peer groups. And then I kind of got to somehow university, and then the lecturer pulled me on side. He's like, I think you might be dyslexic. I think you better go get tested. So that started that whole process of kind of understanding how I learned. Then I kind of stepped out into the world in terms from a career point of view. And in the back of my head, I was like, I don't want people to know about this. It's not seen as kind of something that, you know, are people going to not want to employ me because they're like, oh, you know, what comes with that in terms of that? And that kind of went around my head for a long period of time. And the only way that I could really understand that was by facing up to it, understanding that, you know, it's not what happens to us, it's what happens inside of us. It's how we go about interpreting what happens to us. And so that's what I've done now in terms of being quite open about it. So when I say that to people, it's like, right, if you keep continuously hiding something, and we look about sustainable performance, that takes a huge amount of energy to put on that facade every day. And for me, it was worrying about emails being sent, taking ages on bits, you know, and the comments that would come back if you made a mistake, you know, you're lazy. Did you not check this? This is stupid. And you're just like, right. Whereas it's not an excuse, but I'm like, look, this is what's going on. This is what's happening. And I found that really freeing. And also what is really good is once you open up to that, there are so many more people that are going through similar situations that will be like, yeah, I understand. You know, that makes sense to me. And that's a real big kind of like, right, I've got people to talk to and go through there. So that was it from my point of view, from hiding.
That is very important. I mean, the point you're making is incredibly important in many ways. If you are true to yourself, if you have that self-awareness and you understand what you're hiding and you don't hide it, as you say, you are surrounded by people, one, who will support you, and two, by people who will understand that issue and give you the space you need to rectify it or to deal with it. It is a shame that there are so many people who don't understand that they are actually hiding something, and they just go through life with those pressures. Look, I think that's, a powerful lesson, and I could talk about this for hours, but it's just touching a nerve for me right now, because again, I see that in my life, in what I have done in the past, and it took me a long time to overcome it. So it's just such a wonderful lesson to put out there so that our listeners can start thinking and saying, what am I hiding? So I urge all your listeners, all our audience, should take this question, pause this podcast or pause the video that you're watching, and think about it. Think about what you're hiding. And then come back to us, because I think you'll find the epiphany will come very strongly.
Yeah. And on that, there's a model called the Johari window. I don't know if you've come across it.
Never heard of it.
So if you imagine you've got a window and it's got four panes of glass. So the top left is, you know, if we knew each other for a long period of time, it's like, right, what do we both know about me? What do I know about myself? And what do you know? And then if you move across, it's like, what do I know about myself, but you don't know? So that's things I'm hiding. And then what do you know about me, but I don't know? They're my blind spots. And then in the bottom corner is, what do we both not know about me, basically? And that's really the untapped potential in terms of that. We use it a lot when we work with teams, or I use it a lot when we work with teams, to really get to understand, you know, what are you hiding and what are your blind spots, basically? And by going through that process, and it can be very uncomfortable because you've got to be open. And, you know, if you realize what you're hiding, but you don't actually admit that you're hiding it, it's just like compounding the problem. So it's just a quite a nice thing to do, basically. So I check people, it's called a Johari window, basically.
Self-discovery is very hard.
It's painful, but that's the process that you need to go through, basically.
But incredibly rewarding.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on to lesson number two. We've had variations of this, Lee, but I'm really interested in how you have put this and your explanation for it. So develop your tribe of people.
Yeah. So obviously working in professional sports, I've been in cultures and we've been in environments where we've been very successful and very unsuccessful, all the failures that come with that. And it's clear to me that the talent pool that we had, or how good those players were, was obviously very important. But if I look back now, when we were successful, they were probably about a similar kind of style, but the environment or the individuals or the personalities we had in that made that successful. And I think that sometimes we just let people into our tribe that we don't really kind of understand if they're going to kind of from a positive point of view. And we have to be careful. And that's kind of not being, right, I'm the star of, you know, I'm the chief of this tribe or whatever, but being careful and just making an audit of the people that you're around, because obviously we understand if you want to get fit, then start hanging around with fit people. If you want to learn about business, start hanging around with business people. And I think that it kind of helps you and supports you in your development, because it enables you, like I said, in lesson number one, to understand if you've got any failings or you need to improve yourself. So it keeps you kind of grounded, but then also it helps you to say, look, this is what I'm doing. So an interesting one for me personally is moving from full-time employment to starting up my own performance company, and all the struggles that comes with in terms of lead generation, clients, proposals, all that stuff before I actually get to do what I really enjoy. And, you know, you kind of explain that to some of your friends who are in employment and they're just like, sounds so much, you know, so stressed, just go get a job. But then if you find a tribe of people who are doing exactly the same of you, or maybe just a little bit further, you know, they're like, look, you're doing the right things. It'll come, patience, because consistency is king. And that's another thing, but it's just one of those things, basically.
I love that, because what you're describing from a corporate sense is culture, but you've taken it even further than the corporate culture. You've taken it into the person, your personal sphere. So the people who are in your sphere of influence, who influences you, where do they sit in your success? What are you learning from them? What are you teaching them? So do they fit your values? This is what I'm hearing. I mean, would I be correct? Is that the pathway we're talking about?
Yeah. So yesterday, or the day before, I was talking to a lawyer in a law firm, and they have gone through some massive growth, and they're like, we are struggling to get lawyers in. And I said to him, look, you know, what's your prerequisites? And he was like, well, most people talk about skill sets, as in experience in a company or qualifications. But actually what's really important is making sure that person holds similar values to the culture they're walking in. We can all talk about New Zealand and the All Blacks, and their culture is, you know, well regarded in terms of people understand what's expected of them as soon as they come in, you know, their unwritten rules, what they come through the door. And he was like, oh, well, we don't really think about that. They just kind of fit in. And you're like, well, yeah, you don't want them just to fit in, because I've been in professional environments where we've signed very talented players that have proven at the top level, but they're not great fit for the culture. And that sets off a chain reaction. One of the coaches, he's like, look, it's a game of thirds. And I was like, what do you mean by that? He's like, well, I've started off, I've come to this club, and we've got 30 players. So he's like, 10, I want to keep. 10, I'm not really sure about, they're on the fence, and 10, I want to get rid of. So I'll get rid of those 10. And he's like, another 10 will come in and it'll be three out of those I want to keep, three. And he's like, three. So he's like, once I've gone through 3 years, he's like, I've built up, you know, 25 players that I want here. And he's like, those five that come in, they'll just either fit in or they'll go straight away and we won't have to worry about it. And I was like, that's amazing. Now, obviously in sport, it's a bit more like, we don't want you, you know, in a corporate setting, we can't be like, right, you don't fit the mold, off you go. But what I've tried to think there is, yeah, skill set, experience are really important, but our kind of talent people kind of really digging down and seeing, is this person the right fit for the company? And the biggest challenge I see we have is if you're exponentially growing and you're like, this is a great time, and you start taking on loads of people that don't fit your culture, the culture always molds around the majority.
Yep. Yep.
And sometimes I talk to people, you know, they say, oh, for me, values are actions, you know, they're not just words. But sometimes what I say to people is like, right, what are your anti-values? What are the things that you just do not accept in this company? And 9 times out of 10, people are like, I'm not sure. So, you know, honesty is one that people say that that's the value of our company. And I'm like, well, dishonesty then is an anti-value. So if anyone is dishonest, right, what's your process? So yeah, that's one of my thoughts on that.
Brilliant. No, I like it. It's got a lot of legs. Again, another topic that we can discuss forever, but there's some really good nuggets of wisdom there. I love the game of thirds. I really do like that. And I think it's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And what you said at the end was really profound. If you let the wrong people in, whether it's into your organization, whether it's into your life, whether it's in whatever, that is going to end up being the culture. That is going to end up being the dominant part of how you interact. And yeah, it's really, as I said, profound, and it's just such a great insight. Well, thank you, Lee. Let's move forward to lesson number 3. Develop self-awareness and emotional intelligence. Couldn't agree more, but give us your take on that.
So yeah, a similar kind of on the back of what I've just been saying is that I was heavily influenced or heavily driven to improve my skill set. So masters in performance, accreditations, et cetera, et cetera. And it was only really till I kind of went through a time in my career when somebody was put on top of me in terms of promoted above me or brought in and they said, look, don't think you're able to do this. And for me, you know, that was a big of a challenge. And then he was right. So he pulled me to one side. He said, look, he said, I'm the pilot. You're the co-pilot. If you don't tell me there's a mountain in front of us, both of us are in a bad way, basically. And then I got to understand him and he was big into kind of, right, you know, it's, we can give technical advice to an athlete, but one area is what we need to understand is how we come across and understanding how they come back to us as well. So that then we can develop a relationship where they're more willing to, you know, buy into what we're saying and also to maybe push themselves a little bit harder because of that respect that's been deserved. So that for me, and then also in terms of, from a dyslexic point of view, you sometimes can come across as quite harsh, you know, because of just the way that maybe you write or how you react to certain things. And then it's like, right, okay, you know, trying to develop that emotional intelligence. And I think obviously self-awareness is hugely talked about in terms of business and the way that we're going, and we can't just turn around and expect people to do things like we used to. We need to kind of develop, right, how am I coming across and what is my presence in the room to the people around me?
That's, again, so true. I'm a great supporter of self-awareness, and I've got too many stories about that, about working with senior execs and board directors who just have no idea. And then that's because they're not self-aware. But the emotional intelligence part is crucial for leadership. It's something that you just hit on, you've just discussed it and given us an insight. You've got to be open. And yes, there's compassion, there's empathy, all of those things go into it. But you have to be aware of those elements within yourself and within your leadership style. So look, these are all very deep, Lee, and I wish we could go through, we wish we could have an episode for each one, but that's the nature of 10 Lessons Learned. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what we do. We give you nuggets and it's up to you to then follow up and find out more. I'm sure that you can find out more, you know, through Lee's website. Let's move on to lesson number 4. Now, this is something that we have talked about many times. I'll preface this before I give the lesson. A lot of people don't do this, Lee, and I don't understand why. Lesson number 4, understand your values.
So I've been into many gyms and companies and performance where they, you know, they have their values written on walls. And they're great. And it looks great. And it looks great for photo opportunities or videos. And I always say to companies, I was like, right, what actions does that mean? So, you know, we want to have fun. Well, right. Okay. That's an interesting one. But what does fun mean to you? Because fun to one person might not be fun to another person. You know, we want to be, you know, we want to hold honesty or integrity. I'm like, right, well, as I just mentioned previously, it's like, right, how do we go about that? And then personally to yourself, and this is where I see the mismatch. And if there's a mismatch, then it creates massive energy and frustration. So one value for me is I want to be healthy for my kids, you know, so that I believe that it's not always about being on this planet for a long time. It's also being on this planet for a good time in terms of from a movement point of view, being able to play with my grandchildren. And we understand the challenges that, you know, people are living longer, but maybe not as healthy as they used to be in later life. Yeah. So that's my value. Now, if you then come into my house and go in my fridge and there's unhealthy food or no healthy food at all, then in my actions, there's a mismatch. And that will lead to me walking in and being frustrated that I'm not living up to that value. So lots of work that I do, especially in this area, is understanding that from the individual. And then those kind of actions, right, well, we need to create habits. And then how do we go about creating habits? Well, we create routines. Then once we've created routines, we start to create some consistency. Once we start to create consistency, we start to create progress. Once we create progress, we're in that momentum stage, basically. And that's where you have to have those discussions with yourself and with your team.
I can't believe you've just given away the secret to getting anything you ever want. Those steps that you just outlined are the secret of how you do things.
Yeah.
So again, if you're listening to this, if you're watching this, rewind. Get this again, because this is gold, people. This is absolute gold. Understanding your values, the one thing that you said there that just rang such a massive bell is that if you profess to have these values and yet you are not living these values, you end up having what one of our previous hosts, Duff Watkins, said, a civil war with yourself. Internally, you don't align with yourself. And so you try to justify the fact that, oh, look, it's okay. I'm only having it once, or I'm only doing this, you know, a few times. And then on the other hand, you're saying, but I am this. It took me, and I'll just come back to me for a moment. It took me many, many years to get this message. And only recently have I understood the profound fulfillment you get when you live your values. It is just amazing. You know, mission statements aside, we can all talk about that and make fun of them, you know, because they're a lot of them are stupid. But when you actually fulfill your own values in your own life, it's just there is no other way to describe it other than fulfilling.
If you're matching your values and you understand them, energy is much easier. Getting out of bed is much easier. In theory, eating healthier, doing all the things we know that we should be doing, having great relationships, self-development, all those areas. If that civil war is not going on inside our brain or and in terms of our body, everything becomes a little bit easier. And if you notice that some people are like, oh, wow, that successful person, they have it so easy. And there's lots obviously going under in terms of how much work they're doing, et cetera, but they want to do the work. You know, I know professional athletes that I've worked with that just don't want to be there. You know, you'd be surprised how many don't enjoy training or don't enjoy.
And now, then, come on, Lee, you're not going to tell me they're just in it for the money. You're not going to say that, are you?
No, I think that, you know, obviously they don't start off thinking like that. No professional soccer player or football player starts off by thinking, right, I don't know. Maybe they do now because it's easier to see how much certain players are earning and the lifestyle and, you know, all that they want with it. But I just don't think that happens. But I think at some point going down the line with some players, there might be a shift where they're like, right, okay. And rightly or wrongly, you know, it's a short career. So they're trying to milk every ounce of whatever it is, media, photo opportunities out of their body to get to where they want to go.
If we go back to what you said, if you're actually fulfilling your values, you'll find it a lot more enriching and your 100%. Life will be so much better for it. Look, I love that one. That one's fantastic. Lesson number five. Lesson number five is probably one of my favorites because I live this day to day. Lesson number five. It shall pass. Tell me about it.
So this came about probably not that long ago, but I was looking at on social media, had Tom Hanks talking about it. And he was like, it shall pass. And to a guy that you would think is very successful, he talked about dark times when he wasn't successful or he wasn't being cast or things were going on. And then amazing kind of, you know, in terms of awards, etc. And he was like, look, what happens to us, it's going to be a rocky road. There are going to be great times in business. And there are, as everyone's going through, lots of people are going through some dark times at the moment. But it's a little bit, I suppose, again, like, you know, with young children, they start sleeping through the night and you're like, we've got this packed. We are happy days. And then 5 days later, you know, you've got 2 weeks of hell, or they get a cold or they're sick or whatever it is. And you've kind of got to be, I think if you kind of go through this, and everyone talks about being present or that, but look, it keeps you grounded. And I'm not saying, you know, when you're good times, don't enjoy them. I'm not saying don't do that. But if you're on that kind of up and down scenario where you've got good times and you're really happy, and then when the bad times come, you're not enjoying yourself, it's like, wow, okay, you know, you're really, again, controlled by external factors. And we want to be, and a big area that I talk about, because people are talking about control, developing control. And I'm like, it's not much we can control. To a certain degree, we can't control our body. Unfortunately, some people get really sick that are healthy and have done all the right things. And likewise, from a mindset point of view. But for me, I'm like, right, what can Robert influence? What can you start to influence in your life? And what can you do from that point? So when you're going through bad times, have an understanding that it's not always going to be bad. And again, what can you start to influence? What can you do? And again, when you've got really good times, you know, like, what can I influence? What can I do? So that's for me.
It's incredibly powerful. It always has been powerful. It will pass. Good times will pass. Bad times will pass. If I can, we've published an episode with two psychiatrists, a Dr. Dilip Jest and Dr. Samantha Boardman, and this was hosted by Duff Watkins. And there was, I'm going to paraphrase this, but Dilip was talking about a study that was done post-COVID, like just post-COVID, when we were still in the pandemic, but it wasn't that high death rate that we had. And the study was done on the population because the psychiatrists were concerned about older people not dealing with the social distancing, with the isolation, because younger people would have Zoom, they would have other ways of communicating. So, you know, This was the thinking. The results were surprising, that the fact that the older people, about 15%, again, not really sure, but roughly around 15% of those that were surveyed were suffering some sort of anxiety or depression. For the younger people, I think up to 28 or so, it was like 75%. And when they dug into it, they found exactly what you're talking about. The older you were, the more you realized it's going to pass. So the anxiety wasn't there. And the younger people who'd never experienced it before, it was the end of the world. So it's a really important point you make, Lee. It really is. And it's backed up by a lot of research, a lot of science, and a lot of Buddhism as well. A lot of philosophy backs it up.
And then from a studies point of view, there's some really good studies about the negative problems with delaying happiness. So what I mean is, it'll be okay when, you know, it'll be okay when we're out of the pandemic. It'll be okay when we're through this crisis. And I meet so many business founders, you know, when we're turning over $1 million or pounds or whatever, it'll be okay or whatever it is. And you're just delaying happiness. And
I'm laughing because I've been there. I'm laughing because I've been there and I know exactly what you're saying.
So you'll go through maybe these 5-10 years of if, when.
Yeah.
And it probably leads on to the next kind of lesson. But you get there and you're like, oh, I've just wasted 10 years of unhappiness for this 1-2 moments of happiness. And you're like, you can't go through life like that. And talking to financial investors and advisors, it's quite interesting because from an economic point of view, we've had it pretty good for 10, 12 years. And we understand that, you know, it's going to be a rough time for the next 2-3, however many years, but it will pass. And then we'll be on to the next. And, you know, you can't kind of, yeah, it's an interesting one when you speak to people.
It's, again, you know, I am blown away by the depth of these lessons. Look, I thank you for that one. That one was brilliant. But we'll, if you don't mind, we'll take a short break now. We'd like to thank our affiliate partner, Audible. Audible is an amazing way to consume 10 lessons learned, books, and other podcasts, allowing you to build a library of knowledge all in one place. You can start your free 30-day trial. Yes, I did say free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned. With Audible, you can find your favorite lessons while at home or on the go. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned for a free 30-day trial. The link will be in the show notes. Our guest today is Lee Eldridge, founder and performance director of Cognitive Athlete. So Lee, let's move on to lesson number 6. Develop systems, not goals. Now, this goes pretty much against a lot of what many of the gurus back in the 80s used to tell you to do. You got to develop your goals. So tell us why we should develop our systems and not goals.
So this comes from the work of James Clear and his book, Atomic Habits, whereby we were all goal-driven. You know, I was goal-driven from myself personally and the athletes that I worked with in terms of lifting this much weight, running this fast, etc. And he kind of put it quite nicely. And I suppose let's look at the World Cup football final or soccer final that's just finished. Both teams had exactly the same goal, but one didn't achieve it and the other one did.
What an excellent point.
Does that mean that France's goals were not the right goal? And you're like, right, no, actually, a lot of it comes down to the systems in place. And I think too long, we're like, right, get your goals sorted, set your goals. Now, for me, goal setting is important and I do use it, but we have to take it that it's a double-edged sword. And what I mean by that is, let's say monetary-wise that you wanted to earn £1 million or $1 million this year, whatever it might be, and you get 990,000 you earn. Well, you haven't hit your goal, you know? So from a motivation point of view, that can be a real kick in the teeth that you kind of haven't achieved what you set out, even though you've earned 900 and So you've done all right, if that's your marker for success. And then likewise, let's say you did 1.1 million. Our brain is pretty quick to say, well, you should have set that goal a bit higher. If you set it to 1.5, we might have been, and you play this kind of back and forward. So for me, it's like, right, okay, what are the systems that you need to put in place? And that comes back down to habit, routine, consistency, progress. Lots of people, if they don't reach their goal, they're more interested about the goal, not the reason why they didn't and the systems that they put in place. An ex-colleague of mine, a big mountaineer, and she was saying that one of the biggest, highest points for mountaineering is obviously climbing Mount Everest. But then one of the lowest points is kind of like when you get back to base camp and you're just sat there going, what am I going to do now? Johnny Wilkinson, the famous rugby player, at the age of whatever it was, 6 or 7, he wrote down he wanted to win the World Cup, and he did it at 21, and then he won it. And then 5 minutes later, he's like, what am I going to do now? And the goal is defining the person, not trying to reach the outcome, basically. And that's where we spend a lot of time, or I spend a lot of time really digging down into people's systems, because there are lots of systems in process for business, but not many systems in process for humans. Weird one.
Well, what do you mean by systems? Now, we all understand what you mean by goal, but what do you mean by system?
So in terms of like, right, how am I going to work? So one area that we look at is kind of cognitive performance. So cognitive performance, if we move out of kind of, you know, from an actual physiological point of view, for me, there's three big areas of cognitive performance, and that is understanding what's your most important tasks, when do you work the best, so your peak performance time, and what's your environment like to enable you to do that. So that's a system. So when I speak to people, I'm like, okay, Rob, what's your most important thing you need to do today? And you need to do every day that's going to push you to achieve that goal. Most people don't get that. You know, most people wake up of a day, open their emails up, and then they're kind of reacting all the time to people. You know, emails are normally people's problems that you're having to solve. Then it's like, right, okay, some people work better in the morning. Some people work better in the afternoons or the evenings. Understanding that, and then making sure that what you're trying to do is put your most important tasks into that time. And then lastly, that environment. We're so easily distracted, you know, messages on our phones, emails, notifications. This is why I hate open plan offices to a certain degree, because you go there and you're in the flow state or the zone or whatever you want to call it. And then somebody will come across and they'll say, hey, how are you doing? And that's broken it. So protect that environment, basically. Where do you work the best and what can you go and do? So lots of companies that go in, I'm like, right, we need to get kind of hubs of work so that you can get booths, so that if you really need to focus, you go and lock yourself away and you get it done. So that's a simple kind of system, basically, for a cognitive performance.
It makes a lot of sense. And the way I've translated that in my head is from a strategic point of view, you've got your strategic plan, your vision for an organization. Then you have your tactical plan, which is the execution. And within that, each element of your tactical plan has got an optimum time for it to be deployed and implemented. And I think that's what I heard when you were talking. Would I be on the right track thinking that way?
Yeah. So
at least in the right direction.
Yeah. So you're breaking everything down, because the biggest way, or the way that we improve, and James Clear talks a lot about this, is compound self-improvement. And that is basically trying to be a little bit better each day. And if we put those systems in place, that's what happens. Yeah. So we're recording this just before January 1st. So everyone will be like, right, I'm going to the gym or eating healthy or whatever it is. And you're looking at sustainable performance. Obviously, the idea of mastery is 10,000 hours, and that's kind of changed. But there's an element of consistency with every top performer that you're looking at in business, in sport, even one area that I've read about a bit in terms of creatives. Oh, they don't have structure, but really good creatives spend hours doing what they love. You know, painters don't just, they are talented, but they also practice a hell of a lot, and we don't allow that. So how can we develop the system to enable us to practice at the right time?
May I just make this point, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but developing systems, it's not a generic system. It's unique to the individual. It's what works for you that you're talking about. Find a system that works for you that will enable you to achieve a goal that you set.
Correct.
That's excellent. Look, I love that. This has been a very insightful and enlightening conversation. Let me move on to lesson number 7. Now, if you'll bear with me, lesson number 7 is part of a quote that, and I want to read out the full quote. The quote is from Lao Tzu, who is an ancient Chinese philosopher. Be careful what you think, for your thoughts become your words. Be careful what you say, for your words become your actions. Be careful what you do, for your actions become your character, and your character is everything. So lesson number 7, be careful what you think. All yours, Lee.
Yeah. So again, if we think about, is it our own thoughts that we're getting, or where are our influences coming from? You know, what are we reading? What are we watching? Who are we hanging around with? And again, you've just put it, if you think about that quote, it's like, right. Okay. So we start to think that, we start to tell ourselves that, our actions then drive that, and then that becomes who we are. So we're a product again of our environment to a certain degree. And, you know, we can look at the science of epigenetics and how our environment initiates a way that our genes are turned on and everything like that. And again, another great quote is, you know, the comparison is a thief of joy. And it's, we can be very easy to compare ourselves to others and to think about that. So
I'm just going to stop you right there, because you've just said something that I've never heard before, but I love instantly. Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah. I'm not sure who said it, but I use it loads because.
You said it now, as far as we're concerned. That's from Lee Eldridge. Yeah. That's fantastic. Sorry to interrupt, but it was just brilliant.
You know, it's so easy to compare yourself to others and think, oh, you're not good enough. And then you're like, right, okay. So if I start to think I'm not good enough, then what I say and my actions, just like that amazing quote, and you just think to yourself, right. And a big concern for me and people who have children growing up is like, where are their influences? So gone are the days where my parents could pull me on the side and say, look, I don't think you should be hanging out with that friend of yours because they're not good for you or whatever it is. We're just ingesting lots of influences in terms from sports stars, movie stars, et cetera, et cetera. So there are lots of people who are like, I don't watch the news anymore, or I don't do this, or I don't do that. And it's like, just be careful that what you think and understand where's that coming from. And it's great to have conversations with that people, especially in a coaching scenario, because it really challenges you to be understanding, right, okay, what am I thinking here? Is it me? Is it you? And then it, like, in terms of all these lessons, it goes all the way back up to kind of the Johari window and like, what's hiding? And you're like, wow, okay. So that's the process of going through these lessons for me when I was going down that.
Well, I was about to say that, but you beat me to it. But every one of your lessons so far is interlocked. Everyone leads into the next one. And it takes you on this journey of, and I don't mean to sound wanky, but it takes you on this journey of enlightenment. Self-awareness seems to be the key to almost every one of these lessons. That I just love that. I love to be careful what you think, especially today in the echo chamber world we live in, that we're only listening to people who agree with us. You know, it makes it difficult to then expand yourself. It makes it difficult to be aware of your own biases because you're not exploring that. Now, look, this has been wonderful. Again, I would love to continue about on more on all of these, but let's move on because we've got a few more to get through and then one more question that I'd like to ask you. But lesson number 8, engagement is the key to sustainable performance.
So lots of people are talking about being present. You've got to be present. But for me, you've got to engage. And so a lot of my work is with what I'd call business dads. So I work with founders or senior leaders that are dads. And it's really difficult sometimes to engage with your kids because you're too busy thinking about something else. And a famous football player talked about how his performance really struggled because he couldn't engage. And we had this with a international rugby player, and his performance was just dipping. And we were like, what's going on there? You know, his training wasn't great. And I'd built up a relationship with this individual. And then I was like, look, what's going on? And he's like, look, you know, I'm about to go through a divorce. And that really hit me that, well, he was unable to engage in gym sessions, in training sessions, or during a game because he was thinking about something else. And we really struggle in this day and age to engage on one thing because we have distractions, because in our brains, we're right, what are we missing out on? You know, the fear of missing out, and, you know, this idea of like doing 100 different things, basically. So what I try to do, especially with the people I work with, is like, right, let's get really good at engaging. Some people struggle to concentrate on one thing for 5 minutes, let alone, you know, an hour and a half, whereas really that's the max that we can do. Let's practice that. And eventually you become better at it. And I think that's the way that people can only truly perform at their best.
I agree. I see the value in what you're saying. Engagement is incredibly important. I would like to hear more about your business, Dad, but we'll get to that before we sign off, because I think that's also really interesting. No, engagement is being present and being in the present, not just observing, but interacting with what's happening now. Incredibly important and vital, as you say, vital for performance, vital for success, vital for you to achieve all of the things we've been talking about. Lesson number 9, probably, again, one of my favorites, because society has drilled into us the opposite of this. But lesson number 9 is wonderful, and I really want to hear your take on it. Failure is an option.
Yeah, I think going back to the people I've worked with, you know, fear of failure was a huge motivator and a huge driver of them, and to a certain point, quite unhealthy. And if I go back to that first question that you asked me, what would you go back and tell your younger self? Well, not worrying about what people think about me, is if I could remove that, then the fear of failure would go, you know, and there's nothing wrong. I think everyone understands we learn way more about failing than we ever do about kind of being successful. But again, you've just touched on it, in society, we kind of say to the successful ones, well done, you've made it. Whereas I'm really interested to hear about people that failed, and you learn those lessons.
Well, you have to fail to succeed.
You know, and people say, right, you know, you learn from your mistakes, but if you can learn from others' mistakes as well, you can enhance that learning process and get to where you need to be much quicker. And that kind of fear of failure is, it's a weird thing. Again, it goes back to, as a kid, you ride your bike down a hill as fast as you want. Don't really think of the outcome of failure, do you? You know, my son is 10 months. He's standing up, falling down. And he doesn't care. He's just in it. He's just like, right. And somewhere along the line, we're like, oh, don't take that risk. Oh, don't fail. You know, it's, we could talk for ages about education systems and what's going and how can we push that out? And again, coming back to, what do you think? We only see successful people. We only see successful people on social media. And it's quite stifling, and it pulls you back.
It really is. And I think we don't appreciate the fact that they are successful because they failed. And then they got up, they learned from that failure and moved on to the next thing, and failed or succeeded and moved on. You can't succeed at everything all the time. So correct. Failure is part of success. Failure is absolutely an option. And I'm right there with you. I'm in Camp Lee. You don't need to be afraid of it. It's something that happens. And go back a few more lessons. You know, you fail, it'll pass. You know, it all intertwined. I love it.
people will push back and say, oh, well, special forces and people in the army, like obviously failure is for them is not great. You know, there's big repercussions of that. And I agree with that. But I'm like, what they are doing is they are putting themselves, they are training themselves and failing and training themselves and failing. So when that moment comes, they don't fail. And I think to myself, if you don't think like that, then when's that moment going to come? And you want to be prepared for that moment to say, right, actually, I'm not going to fail because I've failed, you know, 20,000 times, whatever it is.
I just love this. I think it's brilliant. It's brilliant. All right, let's move on to lesson number 10. So Lee, lesson number 10, define your own success. I think I understand what you mean by that, but I'll let you explain further.
Kind of you go back all the things we've spoke about, and that's a huge area of kind of the work I do, is that what's driving your success? Is your success, again, something that you're looking up to someone else doing, or is it you inside of you? And for me, success comes from people when their visions, values, and purpose kind of meet, they're on point, they have good foundations in terms of being a human being, moving, walking, eating, sleeping, etc. And they also have an understanding of their significant others around them, and that they're supporting them in times when they need to. And that for me is, it's like, wow, okay, how do we go about sitting down and saying, right, what does success look for me? And being brutally honest that when I get this success, is it what I want, basically? Because I've worked with lots of business people, and you've sat inside and they're earning big money and they're head of companies and they're not happy people. And that area of their life is a success. But the other areas, you know, their health is lacking, their relationships with their family and their children is not great. They're struggling to have friends. It's not really their purpose. Then, and you're like, wow, okay. Before you go on this big, long journey, and this success can change because, you know, as we know, life's a game of chapters that once you get married or you find a partner that you love or you get kids or whatever it is, that success changes. But just be aware of what you're driving for.
Love it. I've got nothing to say. I've got plenty to say, but I'm not going to, because that was so articulate. All I will say, though, is to our audience, rewind the whole damn thing and listen to it all again, because what Lee has said, the lessons Lee has shared with us today, are so profound and deep. It'll probably take you a second listen to fully comprehend how important these are to you. So Lee, let me ask you one final question before I then ask you to tell us about business dads. What have you unlearned?
Unlearned?
Something that you held to be true, a truism for Lee Eldridge. And as you've developed and matured, you've realized, well, not really the thing I should be doing or believing.
That's a great question. We're always about gaining more knowledge and becoming more experienced. I think that is probably a big one, is that you can support people and yourself in so many different ways. And money is probably not up there in terms of the one that we need. So what I mean by that is, especially being a dad, it's you have to, you know, be the breadwinner. And yep, okay, there's a part of that. But there's also a huge area of like, right, you also need to be a dad. And I think that a great, somebody, I saw it the other day, is like, I don't want to be a parent. I want to be a dad, or I want to be a mum. You know, so that for me has been the big one for me, especially in the last kind of 5 or 6 years, that really have stepped back, basically.
So shaking off what society expects you to do is something you've unlearned.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
No small feat, my friend. No small feat. Okay, so tell us about business dads. That sounds, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. Tell us more.
So basically, as I mentioned, I was in a professional sport, so new athletes would come. I'd be working in a performance company, new clients would come. And then I was like, right, okay, let's kind of step away and do your own thing. And then kind of probably in November, my daughter was just screaming at me, basically because it was a Saturday morning and she it's daddy time and she wanted to play with me. And I think I was on LinkedIn or doing something. And I just thought to myself, this is not what I signed up to do. I wanted to kind of understand. And I was like, right, I'm trying to develop a business and drive it forward, but then I'm also trying to be a dad. And I was like, right, there must be other dads in the same situation. And so I was like, right. So what I went off did, I went off and I interviewed business dads. So I'm up to just over 65 now. And what we would do in a sport, if I went into a new sport that I'd never worked into, we'd do a needs analysis. So we would go off and find all the research, we'd speak to coaches, we'd watch games. And then we'd say, right, okay, where's the gaps that we need to plug? And for me to work with what I call business dads is like, right, I needed to go out and do that needs analysis by speaking to people to know what the needs are and stuff. And it's not to take away from working mums at all. And it's not to, you know, not to say, it's just like, right, okay, we know that men are notorious for being that lone wolf and going it themselves and just head down and yeah. And so that is kind of where it's come from, basically.
Well, you've gone out and you found your own tribe. You've taken your own advice.
Yeah. So to sit there and to interview people and then sit there, like you must do and think, right, okay, wow, I'm going through the same thing. It's great. And they're great to hear that person. And although people are struggling or they've got challenges, it's like, right, it's nice for somebody to say, yeah, I understand that. I've been through there or I've done that, or this is, yeah, maybe think about this a different way.
And that's what we do on 10 Lessons. That's why we do 10 Lessons, because everyone's gone through what you think you may have gone through alone. And as Lee has just pointed out, you're not alone. Someone else has gone through this. So hopefully we get them on the show, we talk to them, as we've done with Lee, and share their wisdom with you. Look, all I can say, Lee, it's been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome.
I've learned so much today. So for someone with my ego, you wouldn't think I would learn anything, but no, I learned so much today. It's absolutely wonderful. And there's nothing that you have said that I have taken any issue with or have any contrary belief with, because I actually live by most of these. I haven't put them as articulately as you have, but it's just wonderful. It's just, I'm very honored that you agreed to be on our show and share your wisdom.
You're welcome.
So where can people find out more about you?
So yes, the website is pretty good. So www.cognitiveathlete.co.uk. From a social media point of view, LinkedIn's probably the best place to find me. And that's just my name, and you can see me and search there. And then I'm always happy to chat with more business dads and to speak to people and to support. I think, there's a big area of performance that's needed at the moment.
Well, once again, thank you. All of these contact details will be in our show notes. So you'll be able to just click the link and go straight to his website and have a chat to him. And so with that, we'll end here today. You've been listening to 10 Lessons Learned. Our guest today has been Lee Eldridge, the founder and performance director of Cognitive Athlete, sharing his 10 lessons with us all. This episode is supported, as always, by the Professional Development Forum. So please tell us what you think about today's lessons. You can even email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. That's podcast at the number 10, lessonslearned.com. So go ahead and hit that like button, subscribe, and turn on your notification bell so you don't miss an episode of the only show on the internet that makes the world wiser, lesson by lesson. Thanks for listening. See you on the next episode.